It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I know that God's been calling me for a long time, and the devil's been distracting me for a long time. And when I was, you know, in my lowest points, you know, God was there with me and sending me visions and inspiring me. And I remember sitting in the hospital at UCLA after having a mental breakdown, and there's documentations of me drawing a church. And saying, writing, start a church in the middle of Calabasas. Now I told you about my arrogance and cockiness already. Now, the greatest artist that God has ever created is now working for him.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I wanted to start with that because that happened yesterday at Joel Osteen's church, and I'm not a Joel Osteen theology fan, but I am a fan of Jesus, and I know that God is preached. I saw some of the interviews of people at his in the lobby, I guess, before or after, just talking about his expression of deep faith, and I felt their expressions about his deep faith were genuine. And so, you know, God can use all kinds of people, however murky they are on theology, and I think Joel is one of them. But I want to talk about Kanye West for a second, because I've had all of these things in my inbox in the last few weeks about him, and I haven't said anything about him because, you know, you go, well, okay, well, let's just see. Let's hold on. I'll never forget when Mike Ditka became a Christian, the coach of the Chicago Bears, and this was made famous when he was working, you know, playing for the Dallas Cowboys and with Coach Tom Landry, and it was alleged, it was, you know, Tom Landry's influence on Mike Ditka. So I was in Chicago at the time, and Mike Ditka, of course, came to Chicago with great fanfare, but right away the Christian community latched onto him because of his profession of Christ. And I saw, I had a kind of a up close and personal observation of how bad that was, that they put him out too quickly, that they placed pressure on him. He was just a baby, and Christ was all new to him, and I think it didn't end well. And I'm not saying Mike is not a Christian. I'm not saying that at all. I just am saying that where they should have kind of discipled and nurtured him, they really kind of took advantage of his celebrity to sort of promote their causes, and it was not good for him. So I've sort of hesitated with Kanye West because I don't, because we don't know exactly, is this a fad or is this, I don't know. I don't know. I would say, based on what I'm hearing now and the reports that we're getting, it seems to me this man has really been profoundly changed by God. And one of the evidences I read last week was that his wife, Kim Kardashian, was going to pose for something and something very seductive. And he interceded and said, I remember how I used to feel about other women. I don't want my wife to be the object of that. Was pretty profound. I mean, and kind of a real sign to me of a change of heart for someone with his past. So Kanye West again was at Joel Osteen's church last night. As I understand it, he was with them in service yesterday, and then did a concert of his new album last night. But I want to read to you something I actually have been hanging on to, because I didn't choose to mention this, but I want to now. I believe this was from last weekend, and the title is More Than 1,000 People Give Their Lives to Jesus During an Altar Call at a Moving Kanye West Sunday Service in Louisiana. More than 1,000 concertgoers reportedly dedicated their lives to Jesus Christ on Friday during rapper Kanye West's latest free Sunday service in Baton Rouge. Jonathan Stockstill, pastor of Bethany Church in Baton Rouge, introduced West to a crowd of thousands. Can we hear it for Jesus? Stockstill asked. He is king tonight. West took the stage in a rather humble fashion and performed several of the songs from his new hit album, Jesus is King. He kicked off the service with a song called Closed on Sunday, which name drops Chick-fil-A. You are my Chick-fil-A, West rapped during the packed performance. Hold the selfies, put the gram away, get your family, y'all hold hands and pray, raise our sons, train them in the faith through temptations, make sure they're wide awake, follow Jesus, listen, and obey. I want to read on this. According to Kirvine Brewington, pastor of Crosswoods Church in Lafayette, Louisiana, the crowd was on fire for God. If you've ever doubted the legitimacy or spiritual impact of West's Sunday service project, simply look at this incredible shot taken by Rebecca Bradley during the altar call. Yes, I said altar call, he added. And then he said, tonight worship was lifted. The name of Christ was exalted. The word of God was preached. A multitude prayed together. The gospel was clearly proclaimed, and an opportunity to respond was given. In a crowd of 6,000 people from all walks of life, all ages, and all races, I personally witnessed over 1,000 individuals accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior. I danced, wept, stood in awe of God's redemptive work, and I can honestly say that tonight I witnessed a new wave of revival firsthand. I wanted you to hear that because, well, there's several things. First off, let me say, leave it to my black friends to point out to me a long time ago, I believe it was the guy that ran for Senate against him. I worked on his campaign, for heaven's sake, when he ran against Barack Obama in Chicago, and I'll think of his name in a second, but he was the first one who said to me, Sandy, it really is the black community that will lead revival and change in this country, because we are in a unique position. We are in a unique position because of the elevation of the discussion of racism, and all of the people don't dare criticize black men in leadership unless they're the wrong black men like Clarence Thomas. But you know what I'm saying. It's hard for them to really criticize a Kanye West and others. And Alan Keyes is who I was thinking of. And so Alan was saying to me, and others then echoed the same thing, that Jesus often uses... He just goes about things in a different way. And can't you just see his hand on this? Using a rapper to create and start an incredible revival in this country, beginning with people who love rap and are part of that hip-hop culture that has been so immoral that God would start there. You know, I've been wondering, you know, about, remember that, maybe some of you don't remember, but I will tell you firsthand, that God in the 70s and 60s during the hippie anti-war riots, the burning of Watts and all of the things, the turmoil of that those decades, God reached down and did a profound work among the hippies through the Jesus movement. And so many of you might not know it, but so much of our music in the evangelical Christian circles was birthed out of the transformation of lives during that period. And so I'm honestly thrilled by this. I just tell you right, I am thrilled. I can just, like I said, God never does things in way that we expected. He certainly doesn't do it, you know, through the, he for the most part does it using people that are the least likely. I think of Chuck Colson, who was radically transformed. He was President Nixon's hatchet man, and he was sent to prison, probably unjustly. It doesn't mean he didn't do anything, but he was sent to prison for taking one FBI file. Think about what we're talking about now, what people are doing. Nevertheless, God did not waste that. Chuck Colson had this dramatic conversion to Christ, went on to just be a powerhouse, writing these books, deeply intellectual books about persuading people to the gospel, the good news of Jesus. And so this is what God does. He takes unlikely characters like Kanye West profoundly, and Kim Kardashian, for heaven's sake. I don't know about Kim's heart. I don't know where she is with this. I do know that in the article about her outfit that she was going to wear in this photo shoot, she basically said, I listened to my husband. You know, so I didn't do that. I didn't wear that because he didn't want me to. So we see that she certainly respects her husband and is willing to listen. Now, whether she's had a transformation, I don't know, but isn't that something if she does? Can you imagine if Jesus starts a revival in this country through Kanye West and Kim Kardashian? Oh, I could see that in a heartbeat. And so I just wanted to start the show with that because I'm going to tell you a lot of other news. God is at work. In case you had forgotten, in case I had forgotten, God is at work profoundly in this world. And so I want to move to this. Now back to a little bit of, you know, what's in the news. Brett Kavanaugh, many of us watched a year ago last spring. I think that's the date. That hearing, which was just agonizing and horrific, really. When we saw people shouting out in that hearing room and climbing up the Supreme Court steps and screaming and knocking at the door, this mob. And it was just unbelievable, the things that we saw during that. We saw a nominee for the Supreme Court justice break down and cry when he talked about his daughter praying for the people that were degrading him. In that moment, it was an amazing thing. And, of course, God didn't waste that either. I want to say that Brett Kavanaugh spoke at the Federalist Society last week. Now, while he was speaking, this, I believe it's called Move On Justice, something like that. It is a leftist group, we think a great deal of it, funded by George Soros. And, of course, remember that many of those protesters in that room where he was on trial were being paid, and they would run out screaming, remember, and get arrested, and then come back in and do it again, and they bragged about it. It's just so sick. The whole thing is just so sick. Well, Justice Kavanaugh was speaking, and so this Demand Justice, that's the name of the organization, held a rally across from the event with a huge like billboard of Christine Blasey Ford testifying. And they screamed as people went inside for the evening, screaming, "We believe Christine Ford. We believe survivors." So that's what they did. But I want to tell you what Brett Kavanaugh did. He took the stage and he said a lot of things which have been reported by several different news outlets. But I'll choose this one from Daily Caller. Justice Brett Kavanaugh received heroic accolades at a glittering Federalist Society dinner in Washington's Union Station on Thursday, where he delivered the first public remarks since his contentious confirmation to the Supreme Court. He gave a punchy, lighthearted speech, punctuated in spaces with emotional recollections of his nomination to the High Court. "Last year, a lot of my friends put themselves on the line for me," Kavanaugh said. "People risked their jobs and livelihoods. Some of them lost business. They were yelled at, insulted, threatened. I'm on a lifetime mission to thank all my friends." The justice momentarily lost his composure as he recalled the prayers of his daughters offered while his nomination was pending. And he's referring now to Matt Damon, and this will make Matt Damon mocked him on Saturday Night Live. So Kavanaugh says in this speech, "Matt Damon would have made it through this," he quipped, to reference a Saturday Night Live rendering of his second confirmation hearing. In that vein, the justice approvingly cited the hymn, "Be Not Afraid," which he described as a source of strength while his confirmation was pending. That's just a little tiny portion of what he... Meanwhile, the protesters are outside, you know, playing this testimony against him. I'm just saying to you, if I don't say anything else today, I want you to know that God is at work in so many ways. He is using his people to rise up. It doesn't necessarily mean that we who are his people are going to have victory in the way that we'd like. It doesn't mean that, but it does mean this, that the kingdom will be advanced and many people will come to Jesus and there will be reconciliation in many quarters that we never expected. Just stay tuned for a lot of incredible miracles in this time in which we're living. All right, we'll talk about the hearings when we come back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Now, more than ever, preborn babies need your help. A mother's womb has now become the unsafest place in America, with abortion being the leading cause of death and babies being aborted up to term in some states.
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, helping moms choose life. You see, when a mom in crisis sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
She did let me hear the heartbeat, and I was like, wow, it's something like living inside of me. It was a beautiful thing to hear.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Mark Menzies, Undersecretary of Energy. He works to advance our country's energy technologies. 2 Peter 1:5 reminds us of the importance of acquiring knowledge to improve our lives. For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask for wisdom for Mark Menzies as he helps manage new energy technologies for the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans from Israel. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
For the past several years, there have been growing concerns about the leftward lurch of the Southern Baptist Convention, the only religious body to return from the brink of liberalism. But now the Southern Baptists are at a crossroads. One Baptist leader even compared evangelicals who support President Trump to Jimmy Swaggart, the television evangelist who betrayed his wife and slept with a prostitute. Just as concerning, recent remarks made by Dr. Russell Moore, the president of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission.
An evangelical Christian who despises immigrants is an evangelical Christian who is self-defeating and self-loathing.
Dr. Moore made those comments at the National Immigration Forum, an organization funded by George Soros, a known leftist. Every Southern Baptist listening to this commentary should ask their pastor why a Southern Baptist organization is affiliating itself with anything supported by George Soros. Reporting from Israel, I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
2 years ago, I stood before you and I urged you to resist, and you did. But we are more than a resistance now. We are a majority. We are a majority in one house, and we will become the majority in the other. And we will send... We will send that charlatan in the White House back to the golden throne he came from. And you know why? Because we vote. How do we build another big, beautiful wave? We vote.
All right, so that is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, who's an impartial, you know, impeachment is a process by which we decide if a president has done something that is a high crime or a misdemeanor worthy of impeachment. And so Adam Schiff just tells the Democratic Party in California that we are part of the resistance. Now, that should be troubling for anyone listening. The resistance formed immediately after Donald Trump was elected. We need to impeach him. They started talking about it immediately. Resist, resist. And so This is exactly what bureaucrats in D.C. have done. Whether they were in the White House, the various agencies, they have tried to undermine and resist every single thing President Trump has tried to do. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi, also, of course, impartial, and we have to wait and see where the evidence takes us. All right, she was on Face the Nation, and this is what she had to say about the president.
President Trump was watching today's testimony. That was made clear because he tweeted about Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. Everywhere she turned went bad. And then he listed a number of posts she'd been at. Said, fast forward to Ukraine, where the new Ukrainian president spoke unfavorably about her. It is the president's right to appoint ambassadors. Why do you think he was tweeting about her?
Because he made a mistake. And he knows her strength, and he was trying to undermine it. Of course, presidents appoint ambassadors, but people don't insult people, especially when they're giving testimony before the Congress of the United States. I think even his most ardent supporters have to honestly admit this was the wrong thing for the president to do.
The White House said it was just his opinion. He wasn't trying to intimidate. What do you think?
But the president and perhaps some at the White House have to know that the words of the president weigh a ton. They are very significant, and he should not frivolously throw out insults. But that's what he does. I think part of it is his own insecurity as an imposter. I think he knows full well that he's in that office way over his head, and so he has to diminish everyone else.
You know, I have to tell you, let's see, he's an imposter. He's way over his head. Really? Anyone that's watching what President Trump is actually doing can see that he is actually, when he brags about doing more than probably any other president, he's, except for maybe George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, he's not lying. And given the slower pace of life then and the way communications happened, I'm sure they didn't accomplish. Life was not as complicated as it is now. President Trump has done incredible things, and he never ceases to amaze me. The things that come in my inbox that he's doing that you never hear about. Just like he pardoned two military men who had been condemned for murder, who were by the military courts in the act of, you know, doing. I hope to talk about this in more detail tomorrow, but let me just say that. They were in combat, and they were accused of murder by military courts. And those military courts, of course, were under the direction of Obama-appointed Pentagon officials. So the president just over the weekend pardoned these two men who are now out of Leavenworth, like overnight out. And Eddie Gallagher, who was also charged with murder in combat, received his rank. I mean, I think the thing he was finally the thing that Eddie Gallagher was finally charged with was taking a picture with a corpse. And so he's received his rank back. And, of course, the military officials at the Pentagon are upset about this. You'll hear about that. But I'm just saying this is one thing that he's done in the last 24 hours. And he basically said, when we get to it, I think his words basically were, I want the men who fight in our armed forces to have confidence when they go into battle. I don't want them to be second-guessing themselves, and that's why I'm pardoning them. That's basically what he says. But Nancy Pelosi would have us believe that this president is an imposter. He's incapable. He's in over his head. Meanwhile, the economy is going bonkers, absolutely bonkers. We've never seen anything like this. And so, you know, he's over his head. And yet Nancy Pelosi's accomplishments, as best I can tell, as the Speaker of the House right now, it's complete gridlock. They're doing nothing. They're not even bringing up legislation. We have a budget that we have to pass, and that's another discussion for another day. It's turning into a nightmare. We've got the Canada-Mexico trade agreement in which they're doing nothing. Now, I understand they're doing some really bad things behind closed doors, meaning the Democrats and the Republicans are giving away the store, the Republicans in the Senate especially, and so we may end up with a really bad budget deal because they give the Democrats, as usual, everything they want and more. But really, the business of the people isn't being done. And yet she has the audacity to say that President Trump is in over his head? Really? She's like a sorority girl, you know, waging war against a fraternity brother. It's like the pettiness of social clubs, and it is not about the business of governing. And so Nancy Pelosi then, of course, is convincing us, allegedly, that he is like in over his head, this president, who's unorthodox, careless sometimes with his words. He's not a politician. He actually says what he thinks, and it gets him in trouble. But he's quite capable of doing the business of the people. He's proven that time and time again. Nancy went on, Mrs. Pelosi went on in Face the Nation to make some other damning comments. So let's just listen.
Can you help walk the American people through what happens next? We have another week of hearings.
Yes.
There'll be an intelligence report written up. Mm-hmm. And then what? Does the president get, as he says, to confront his accuser or get due
process? What do you mean confront his accuser? Confront the whistleblower?
Presumably.
Well,
that's what
I will make sure he does not intimidate the whistleblower. So the president could come right before the committee and speak all the truth that he wants
if he wants to
take the oath of office, or he could do it in writing. He has every opportunity to present his case. But it's really a sad thing. I mean, what the president did was so much worse than even what Richard Nixon did. But at some point, Richard Nixon cared about the country enough to recognize that this could not continue. The Intelligence Committee is leading this part of the inquiry. There are other depositions that are being taken by more committees. So some of the depositions will continue, and then what takes place in the intelligence public will continue for another week. I don't know how much longer. I guess it depends on how many more witnesses they have. That's up to the committee. I don't guide that. That's up to the committee.
All right, so now the president has done something worse than Richard Nixon, and so therefore President Trump should resign. And if he really loved the country, he would resign as Richard Nixon did. Well, that would be easy for them, wouldn't it? I just hope and pray he does not do that. But we're talking about things like the witnesses this is so ridiculous. I don't know if any of you watched the hearings on Friday, and it was tough to watch. I tried. The former Ukrainian ambassador, Yukanovich, they asked her basically, well, how did you feel when he said that? How did you feel when he let you go and you fired? It was questions that were just, it was mind-boggling. I really don't know if many Americans could make their way through that. I thought, now I know a lot about the details here, and yet this is really just boring and silly. And could I just point out that according to a Washington Post article, and this is December of 2008, written by Glenn Kessler, who is a real lefty. He is. I don't know what else to say. I could be more refined. He tends toward the view of the Democrats. But he basically reports that right after President Obama came into office, he gave tons of ambassadors their pink slips. In fact, they had to vacate their posts as of January 20th. So President Obama fired a lot of ambassadors because he wanted his own people in there. This is what presidents do. Glenn Kessler spells it out and tells us all about it. But I want to go further. And I think this headline really says it better than I could word it. Obama left an ambassador to die. But we're supposed to be outraged over Trump's Yovanovitch tweet? During a testimony, the president tweeted that everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. That's his terrible tweet. That's his slander on her as she's testifying. And it is a terrible truth that Ambassador Rice was left to die in Benghazi. While Obama, we still don't know where he was on that night. We still have no idea what he was up to on that night when the desperate calls for help came. We don't even really know where Hillary Clinton was. That's part of her email that has, I think, Judicial Watch has part of it, but we still don't know. Where was President Obama? Where was he when his ambassador was pleading for help because he was about to be killed along with his aides? And he was killed. So that's what President Obama did for his ambassador, Rice. And yet President Trump tweeted that Yovanovitch, everywhere she went, turned bad. That's impeachable, according to the Democrats. It is so bizarre that I really did find it interesting that Saturday Night Live, who notoriously, you know, hates the president, and certainly in what I'm going to play you, they don't love him, but even they are mocking this procedure. I want you to hear the first minute or so of their opening skit on this past Saturday night, clip 7.
This week, 13 million Americans tuned in to watch the impeachment hearings as multiple officials testified against President Trump. But some complained the hearings were lacking in pizzazz, dull, and not The Masked Singer. So to make sure people are paying attention, we now present the hearings in a way that underscores how scandalous these revelations really are. This is
Days of Our Impeachment, where the only thing at stake is democracy. Starring Adam Schiff.
Excitement, emotion, and none of it for me.
Cross-examiner with a mysterious brain injury, Jim Jordan.
I've got my sleeves rolled up because my job is yelling at a woman.
Former ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch.
Why did Trump come after me? I committed the ultimate sin. I was good at my job.
And John Hamm as career diplomat Bill Taylor.
I don't just kiss and tell. I kiss and tell and I take notes.
Like tweets through your timeline, this is Days of Our Impeachment.
All right, so that's the first part of it, and they go on and on, and it's actually, it's funny. I have mixed feelings. I mean, it's very good that they're mocking this because it's mock-worthy. It's ridiculous. But it is also kind of sad to me that something so serious is happening, and we are resorting to humor. Even the pundits are beginning to laugh. I noticed that on Fox. It's like a thing of derision and laughter, and that's well and good. Because I think derision and laughter is called for. But the problem is, it remains a serious situation. We have absolutely no assurance. Adam Schiff is on impeaching the president, and so is Nancy Pelosi. And even if they don't have any Republican votes, which all impeachments, the few that we've had, have been a bipartisan effort to come to the truth about whether a president has reached the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. And there have always been some people of both parties who see it one way and who see it another way. But this time, it is deeply partisan. It is all the Democrats in favor and all the Republicans opposed. At least we think all the Democrats would be in favor. We don't know about those, I think 32 or so that were elected in states where President Trump won the presidential race in 2016. You might wonder, you know, how are Americans viewing this? And I find myself wondering that. I ask someone that I know anyway, I know her in a casual way, but I asked her, like, she was the I said, you be my focus group. You know, what? There's no right or wrong answer here. Just tell me, what do you think about the impeachment hearings? And she said, well, to be honest, I hate to tell you this because I know what you do. What's going on? You mean impeachment like Nixon? Are they trying to impeach President Trump? That was her response to me. She knew nothing about it. Nothing about it at all. Nothing about it. Now, I don't know. I mean, I know that people that listen to this show, none of you have heard nothing about it. But I just wonder how many people in the population are in that position. And that's sad, too, because that means that this group of people in D.C. are going to be walking all over us, walking all over American citizens who love this country and love the Constitution and its foundings. This is a battle to the death. It still is a battle. However funny it may appear from the outside, this is a very dangerous exercise. I want to tell you that, according to Kim Strassel, she reported in an article called The Democratic Party's Never-Ending Impeachment Effort, that the 538 blog did a sort of a poll tracker, and they found that Democrats overwhelmingly support impeachment, Republicans overwhelmingly oppose it, a majority of independents continue to oppose it. A Morning Consult found that 81% of voters say there's little or no chance they will change their minds, but here's a better breakdown. Reuters Ipsos poll, November 4th through the 5th, showed that 75% of Democrats support the impeachment. 79% of Republicans are opposed. So, this is where we are. It's a very dangerous situation. And in spite of the humor of it, it still presents a great danger to us and our future as a country. All right, don't go away. More to say. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Singer Alicia Keys took her 4-year-old son to a nail salon to get a rainbow-colored manicure. Once it was done, her son told her he didn't want his fingernails painted in rainbow colors. Afterwards, Keys made an Instagram video venting her frustration about biological stereotyping and labeling. God-given sex isn't a label. It's biology. And biology is not bigotry. Alicia was completely off key on this one.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Send joy to a child in need with Operation Christmas Child. Simply pack a shoebox with fun toys, school supplies, and hygiene items. Then drop it off during National Collection Week, November 18th through the 25th. And the best part is the good news of Jesus Christ that's shared alongside your gift and the opportunity for life-changing discipleship afterwards. Visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC for gift suggestions and to find a drop-off location near you.
Christian apologist Dr. Frank Turek.
They're saying LGBTQ concerns are more important than, say, Mother Teresa's concerns or Billy Graham's concerns or any Christian's concerns. Those are all moral positions, and you can't avoid legislating morality.
Join Dr. Turek as he cross-examines skeptical and atheistic viewpoints. Saturday mornings at 9 Central and Sunday afternoons at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Jesus set the bar for valid testimony when he declared it is only by the mouth of 2 or 3 witnesses that every fact is confirmed. The testimony must come from actual witnesses, not from somebody who only heard about something from somebody else. If a witness didn't see it or hear it himself, his testimony doesn't count. This principle lies at the very foundation of American jurisprudence. In the Constitution, for the crime of treason, the only crime identified in the Constitution, the founders adopted the standard that Jesus set. I quote, "No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of 2 witnesses to the same overt act." We don't convict someone of treason based on hearsay, and we most certainly do not remove a president from office based on hearsay. But that's all the Democrats have.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump is being sharply criticized for his remedying last week of injustices perpetrated against 3 of our nation's warriors by military commanders, investigators, and or courts. Yet, there have been myriad cases since 9/11 of troops in harm's way being vilified and punished because their chain of command did the politically correct thing and threw them under the proverbial bus. Correcting such miscarriages of justice in the cases of 2 Army officers, 1st Lieutenant Clint Lawrence and Major Matthew Goldstein, and a Navy SEAL named Eddie Gallagher, should be but the start of a wider program of clemencies, pardons, and restoration of ranks for other deserving veterans. Far from undermining morale or promoting misconduct, standing with our men and women in uniform will restore their confidence that we're not just grateful for their service, but that we have their backs. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Here comes another week of hearings as the president is fighting back on Twitter, blasting the inquiry, writing this: "The crazed do-nothing Democrats are turning impeachment into a routine partisan weapon. It is very bad for our country and not what the founders had in mind. One witness, it's not scheduled, is the president, though Speaker Pelosi is extending that invitation."
The president could come right before the committee and speak all the truth that he wants if he wants to.
You don't expect him to.
If he wants to take the oath of office, or he could do it in writing. He has every opportunity to present his case.
All right, so take a look. In all eight witnesses this week, tomorrow, Jennifer Williams, aide to Vice President Pence, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a Ukrainian expert on the NSC, then former Special Envoy Kurt Volker and NSC staffer Tim Morrison. On Wednesday, Ambassador Gordon Sondland, everyone wants to hear from him, plus Pentagon official Laura Cooper and Undersecretary of State David Hale. On Thursday, NSC staffer Fiona Hill. This as Chairman Schiff is hammering the president in California.
2 years ago, I stood before you and I urged you to resist, and you did. But we are more than a resistance now. We are a majority. We are a majority in one house, and we will become the majority in the other. And we will send that charlatan in the White House back to the golden throne he came from.
But Republicans are standing firm behind the president.
The scary thing is the Democrats have been out to get this president. I was struck by listening to Speaker Pelosi's comments. She used the word imposter, talking about the president of the United States.
Finally, guys, when does all this end? Well, Speaker Pelosi was also asked in that interview when it would end, and she says she doesn't know when the inquiry ends.
All right, so that's Griff Jenkins. And, you know, not a criticism of Griff, but you can see, I mean, they were all laughing about it this morning on Fox and Friends. There's laughter. I don't blame them because I find myself doing the same thing. And yet it's a caution to me that we're becoming callous. And again, I say to you, there's tremendous danger in what's happening in Washington. They could easily impeach this president. It could easily go to the Senate. And according to Mitch McConnell, he told us over the weekend, well, if it comes to that, the Senate has to hold a hearing. We have to do a trial. So Mitch McConnell is not taking the advice of some who say the Senate does not have to respond to something so bogus. There is a procedure by which you can just dismiss it. Evidently, Mitch McConnell, I know this for a fact, that his staff is busily working. This is kind of like, these are my words, they're kind of moment in the sun. I heard one of them give a briefing, kind of excited about this. Let me tell you about, and this is how this is going to work, and this is how, so I'm telling you, there is great danger. And so just be aware of that as you listen this week, not to discount it and say, oh, it's funny and can be dismissed. It cannot. So I did not respond to this earlier where Nancy Pelosi in that Face the Nation report was talking about warning the president against coming after that whistleblower. Don't you dare that. I'm going to protect him. Remember the whistleblower, Eric Chiramella. Is up to his ears in nefarious activity. He is not like an innocent guy who saw something wrong. He didn't even see it. His account is secondhand of the call. Now we actually have the call. We know what was said. It's nothing like Eric Chiramella characterized it. We also know that the inspector general, which I didn't even get to that, the inspector general who decided to let Eric Chiramella's complaint go forward is deeply compromised. I wish I could, if I had the article in front of me, I could help you understand how deeply connected he is with the whole deep state issue. And in fact, he ignored the advice of the Justice Department. He ignored the advice of others who told him that he was not following procedure. They actually changed the form that Chiramella filled out in order to make it possible for him to do what he did and come out with a supposedly bombshell report. And Nancy Pelosi now is talking about him like that's what they want you to believe. He's this poor guy, this poor innocent guy who just wanted to do what's right and come out and tell the truth. And now the president's trying to get him. It's just not like that. But they're beautifully talented at twisting things. And so they're twisting this. Let me remind you that poor Eric Chiramella, his attorney now has founded a GoFundMe page, which I think has raised nearly $250,000 for poor Eric Chiramella, the whistleblower. I think he'll do just fine. I think he'll be fine. But he's not going to be allowed to testify, even though earlier Adam Schiff said he must testify. Now, not so much, because he might get asked some really hard questions. So that's the state of that. A couple of other things. The star witness last week, we played that incredible interaction with Jim Jordan, where he tears William Taylor's testimony apart because it was, he said that, then I heard that she said, and then he had told her and they had told them, I can't tell you the names. It was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. And then Jim Jordan says, and you're their star witness? Well, I want to tell you a little bit more about William Taylor that's coming out now. He said in his early remarks when he first testified, I has served as ambassador to Ukraine from 2006 to 2009, having been nominated by George W. Bush. And in the intervening 10 years, I have stayed engaged with Ukraine, visiting frequently since 2013 as a board member of a small Ukrainian non-governmental organization supporting good governance and reform. But now we know a little bit more about this. It's been this part of his bio almost scrubbed entirely from the web. William Taylor spent several years on the board of Ukrainian NGO called EEF, East European Foundation, that has a strong partnership with Open Cities Association. Open Cities Association is funded by Open Governments Partnership, which accepts large amounts of funding from George Soros Open Society Foundation. Goes on to make the case about Taylor was a senior advisor to the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council, where he often presented roundtable discussions about policy with David Kramer from the McCain Institute. That's as in John McCain. McCain, you might remember, was the one who hand-carried that dossier back. John McCain sent him to get it. He went overseas, hand-carried the Steele dossier, that tabloid, fake, phony dossier they used to start this whole notion that Russia colluded and the president was involved in all of this. So it was David Kramer. And so we know that William Taylor was involved with David Kramer, who was also a key player at the USUBC in the Atlantic Council, which is a Washington, D.C.-based organization funded in part by, stay with me, Viktor Pinchuk, a Ukraine billionaire who has donated to the Clinton Foundation. CrowdStrike co-founder and CTO Dmitry Alperovich is also a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. All right, let me just say, bottom line is that William Taylor is involved with the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council was also populated by Dmitry Alperovich, who was the co-founder of CrowdStrike. Who's CrowdStrike? You notice they're not talking about, at least to my knowledge, CrowdStrike in these hearings. They're talking about the fact that the president asked an investigation, kind of as an aside at the end of the call with the president of Ukraine, an investigation into Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Okay, pretty much that's what he said. But earlier, the president, early in the call, he talks about CrowdStrike. And I've explained this time and time again, but CrowdStrike was the technical entity that the Democratic National Committee asked to come in and investigate who hacked their server. The FBI decided not to go in and investigate themselves who hacked their server. They actually allowed the DNC to choose the entity it wanted, and it chose CrowdStrike, which was founded by Dmitry Alperovich, whatever his name is. And so CrowdStrike is based in Ukraine. And the allegation, of course, is, and I think it's more than an allegation now, that this CrowdStrike was the one that declared that it was the Russians who hacked the server. And WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange said it wasn't the Russians. It wasn't. He told Congressman Dana Rohrabacher from California in a long interview from the Peruvian embassy, in-person interview, it was not the Russians. And Julian Assange was eager to testify that it was not the Russians who gave him that information. And remember, he was mysteriously arrested in the middle of the night by the British, who were up to their neck in the Steele dossier, because Christopher Steele, by the way, is, you know, a former member of MI6. So the Brits did not want this to come out either. And so mysteriously, the British went into the Peruvian embassy and whisked Julian Assange away, where he remains in solitary confinement in Great Britain and cannot speak out. That's a long explanation. But William Taylor seems to be, certainly, was working with George Soros entities and working with people involved with CrowdStrike and exposing that dossier. So that, but that's been scrubbed from the net, so you probably won't find that. Also, John Solomon is reporting that this is complicated, too. This is a very long report. While the 2016 presidential race was raging in America, Ukrainian prosecutors ran into some unexpectedly strong headwinds as they pursued an investigation into the activities of a nonprofit in their homeland known as Anti-Corruption Action Center. The focus on that organization, whose youthful street activists famously wore Ukraine blank. I can't say that word. Ukraine blank. It's an American foul word that starts with F. Corruption T-shirts. They wore those. Was part of a larger probe by Ukraine's Prosecutor General Office into whether $4.4 million in U.S. funds to fight corruption inside the former Soviet Republic had been improperly diverted. This is a lot of information. John does a great job investigating, but basically what it is, what it's going to say, is that the United States Embassy pressed Ukraine to drop the probe of this George Soros group during the 2016 election. That's what it all boils down to. Now, who was involved then? It seems to me we had an ambassador named Yukanovich, who was quizzed by just last week. You know, how did you feel when the president let you go? I felt very bad. It was awful. And that's pretty much the exchange. But I believe that she was the ambassador during this time when they were encouraging Ukraine, urging them, pressing them to drop the probe of George Soros and his group during the 2016 election. There's a lot more to that. In fact, we should put that article on our Facebook page. It's U.S. Embassy pressed Ukraine to drop probe of George Soros group during 2016 election. Again, there's a lot more to that story, and that kind of goes with this counter story, which came out. Now, this is interesting. Politico, again, is a left-leaning entity that operates out of Capitol Hill. But they printed a long expose. This is dated. Well, I'll tell you, I'll read the title and then I'll give you the date. Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter only to back away after the election. And they helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors, a Politico investigation found. And it goes on to talk about the effect on the election. But this article was dated January 2017. And so this is the way it's happening. I want to change the subject quickly because A.G. Barr made a statement that I think you need to hear, Attorney General Barr. And here it is, clip 9.
Unfortunately, just in the past few years, we have seen these conflicts take on an entirely new character. Immediately after President Trump won election, opponents inaugurated what they called the resistance. And they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool and maneuver to sabotage the functioning of the executive branch and his administration. The fact of the matter is that in waging a scorched earth, no holds barred war of resistance against this administration, it is the left that is engaged in the systematic shredding of norms and undermining the rule of law.
All right, that was Attorney General Barr, and that's in the wake of us waiting for the imminent release of the first report by Inspector General Michael Horowitz. And interestingly enough, they're in this phase where the people that are mentioned in this particular review are now able to review what's been said about them, but the attorney, the IG is not going to permit them to present written rebuttals, and so you can expect that the PR machines are being hired all over D.C. to come out and tell you that they really didn't do what the Inspector General's report is going to report that they do. But I think the most damning report, of course, is going to be the one of John Durham, and that's whether the Democrats actually colluded with a foreign power to undermine this president. That's my words for what he's doing, and that's going to be coming out. We don't know when, but this Michael Horowitz one is imminent, and you just heard what the Attorney General said. I think that's pretty stunning, don't you? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.